There is a verse previous to this one, which has no purport, but and this is the verse 28, which we'll chant responsively. So Maharaj, when he gave class, he left off at verse 26. So verse 27 I will do, and then we'll. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So verse 27, which isn't here, is Yada Diveshu Vedeshu Goshu Fibreshu Sadhu Shu Dharme Mayi Chavidvesha Savai Ashu Vinasyati. And the translation of this is, when one is envious of the demigods who present the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when is one envious of the Vedas, which give all knowledge, of the cows, the Brahmins, the Vaishnavas, and religious principles, and ultimately of me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he and his civilization will be vanquished without delay. So I shall repeat this later and tie it in, but here we have verse 28. Nirvairaya. Nirvairaya prasantaya sasutaya mahatmane pradaya yadadriyat danisipi varorjitam. Translation. When Hiranyakasipu teases the great devotee Prahlad, his own son, who is a peaceful and sober and who has no enemies, I shall kill Hiranyakasipu immediately despite the benedictions of Brahma. So responsibly, when Hiranyakasipu teases the great devotee Prahlad, his own son, who is peaceful and sober and has no enemy, I shall kill Hiranyakasipu immediately, despite the benedictions of Brahma. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Of all sinful activities, an offense to a pure devotee or Vaishnava is the most serious. An offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava is so disastrous that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has compared it to a mad elephant that enters a garden and causes great havoc by uprooting many plants and trees. If one is an offender at the lotus feet of a Brahmana or a Vaishnava, his offenses uproot all his auspicious activities. One should therefore very carefully guard against committing Vaishnav aparad, or offences at the lotus feet of a Vaishnav. Here the Lord clearly says that although Hiranyakasipu had received benedictions from Lord Brahma, these benedictions would be null and void as soon as he committed an offence at the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, his own son. A Vaishnav like Prahlad Maharaj is described herein as Nirvairya, having no enemies. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.21 it is said, Ajata Satrava Santaha Sadhava Sadhu Bhushanaha. A devotee has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. A devotee does not create enmity with anyone, but if anyone becomes his enemy, that person will be vanquished by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, despite whatever benedictions he may have received from other sources. Hiranyakasipu was certainly enjoying the fruitful results of his austerities, but here the Lord says that as soon as he committed an offense at the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, he would be ruined. One's longevity, opulence, beauty, education, and whatever else one may possess as a result of pious activities cannot protect one if one commits an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava. Despite whatever one possesses, if one offends the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, he will be vanquished. So, verse 27, Yada Diveshu Vedeshu Gopu Vipeshu Sadusha Dharme Mayi Cha Vidveshaha Savai Astu Vinasiti. And to this verse, we 28, Niraiva Pasantaya Sasutaya Mahatmane Praradaya Yada Druyat Danisye Pi Varorjitam. When one is envious of the demigods who represent the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of the Vedas, which give all knowledge, of the cows, Brahmins, Vaishnavas, and religious principle, and ultimately of me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he and his civilizations will be vanquished without delay. When Hiranyakasipu teases the great devotee Prahlad, his own son, who is peaceful and sober and has no enemy, I will kill Hiranyakasipu immediately, despite the benedictions of Brahma. Nama Om Vishnu. I feel very honored in being here. I have known His Holiness Raghunath Maharaj for many, many years before he had any disciples. He has always been very kind to me, very encouraging since many, many years before. And he has undertaken a big, big responsibility here, and he's doing so wonderful. This is such a wonderful project that I was always very reluctant to come here, because I know that he's very, very busy, and because we go back so far, he would give some time and attention and so on. So deliberately, for this reason, when I came, he embraced me. He said, "Oh, Smara, so nice to see you." He said, "Is this the first time you have come?" I said, "Oh, Maharaj," I said, "I have deliberately never come because I know you're busy and I don't want to take any of your time like this." I said, "But unfortunately," I said, "now my knee has become damaged and I need some surgery. And so this is why I have come. I'm going to come to the hospital. In fact, I'm going today." So he said, "I've been praying. You will come." And he said, "So now we will fix your knee. So this is why I'm coming. I apologize for sitting on the seat here. And several times you will see me, I don't pay obeisances properly and so on. It's because my knee has become damaged. Actually, I think it was damaged from dancing too much. So if any of you are particularly inclined to dancing, then beware, because at some point you will be attending Mira Road for a few days." We have here, Prabhupada says in this first opening sentence of the verse, he gives some indication of his thoughts. There are 12 commentaries that the Gaudiya of Bhagavatam, that the Gaudiya. Prabhupada, what time should I finish talking? I will just finish it. What time? You tell me. Okay. There are 12 commentaries that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas accept. The commentaries of the Acharyas, the commentaries of Vishnubhat Chakravarti, so on and so on. So Srila Prabhupada, there is a Bengali, big volume, with two volumes, with all of the different commentaries on the important verses, not all the verses. So this is, of course, a very important verse. And Srila Prabhupada, when he would be compiling his translation, and many of it's, of course, he's Acharya, so many of it's his own understanding, his own realizations, the message he must give in order to teach humanity, because he took on big, big task to preach to the whole world, which has never been done before. So, nevertheless, Guru Sadhu Shastra, he would refer to the previous commentaries and see what the previous acharyas were. So in his opening sentence of this purport, we can have an idea of exactly what was the foremost lesson, the foremost thoughts that he was having. So it says in the purport, of all sinful activities, an offense to a pure devotee or Vaishnava is the most serious. So when we think of sinful activities, what do we think about? Here in Bombay, the jails are probably full. In my country, they designed them for a certain amount of people. I think they have 2.5 times the population. They're bursting. They just have no more room for prisoners. So even the prisoners, they're putting conditions which they weren't. Many times that now England has adopted the Human Rights Act, and the prisoners, they are appealing. They say, "This is, you are treating us inhumanely. This is beneath our human rights to treat us like this." So the point is that the prisons are full. And why are they full? What do we consider crime? There's murder. The highest crime is considered treason. Give one's country's secrets to the enemy. So many people, like for example, if someone was to sell the military secrets, the atomic secrets to Pakistan, for example, you can imagine this. It's actually not so, it's not efficient. It takes 48 hours to get ready. The scientists are, so many things. There's no budget. There's so many different things. So this would be, Pakistan could attack. So you can imagine this is considered a very, very grave crime, treason. And then we have ordinary crimes. We have murder. Arson is considered a great crime, especially to burn something, because the whole village, the whole rape, theft, and then so many white-collar crimes. I think the kidney doctor. But so many different crimes there are. And so we can imagine when we think what is sinful. Of course, not all sins in Kali Yuga is a crime, but nevertheless, we get some indication how the laws of Manu have come down. So we can think he is a sinful person. Oh, what crime did he commit? But here Prabhupada is saying in the purport, according to our acharyas, the most sinful, it says, of all sinful activities, all the people, all the charsubis, everyone, of all sinful activities, an offense to a pure devotee or a Vaishnava is the most severe. So this we have to analyze very quickly by 9:15. What is a Vaishnava and what is an offense? Because it's very, very serious. It can destroy our... you can imagine some... in the United States, there is certain technical equipment, certain computer chips, certain... hardware, certain machinery, which cannot be exported because you need special license, because it can be used for warfare. Certain computers you cannot sell to China, you cannot sell certain grades of steel for making armaments. It's a special steel that doesn't blow up when you cannot just dig up one of these pipes from the street in Bombay to make it, it will just blow up. It's special. So these, you need a special license for these things. So we have to understand what is, so a person, he may sell these things, a businessman, and then you get someone from Austria who's selling them on to Iraq, and it's very tricky. You have to examine very, and even they say, I didn't know, I thought he was, I thought he was Austrian. No, you. So the whole family can lose everything. He can go to jail. He can. There's even unintentionally. He said, "I didn't know. I honestly was." So even unintentionally. So this whole apparatus, even if unintentionally, must be very, very, very. So to understand this, we must understand first of all what is a Vaishnava. So Prabhupada does say here in this line, of all sinful activities, an offense to a pure devotee. So, hey, how many pure devotees are there? Not so many. Not in Kali Yuga. So, does this mean that we can be less cautious in our offenses because it only applies to pure devotees? But in the purport, Prabhupada is saying pure devotee or Vaishna, even he says Brahmana, even he says, you know, so again we must be cautious, because we can land up in prison, we can lose our family, all the hopes and dreams, everything. The businessman, he was just a little enthusiastic perhaps. Certainly this would be his defense. But nevertheless, he loses everything, he loses his freedom. So first of all, what is a Vaishnava? But then Jiva Goswami says that anyone who even once sincerely he chants the name of Krishna, he is considered to be a Vaishnava and he is considered worthy of respect. So then we have to perhaps in caution have a very, very wide understanding of who is Vaishnava, because there is such drastic consequences. It is the most sinful activity, more than anything, more than treason, more than the atomic secrets, more than the, in terms of our spiritual life. This is very, very, so we have to be very, very cautious on this point. The other thing is that what is an offense? So in the 10 offenses, it is an offense to blaspheme. The pure devotees are those who are engaged in propagating the holy name. But blasphemy, this is an English term, it's a Christian term. It's actually on the law books in England, blasphemy is a crime. But then, for example, the Satanic Verses by Salman Rushdie, are you familiar with this? He was one Pakistani author. And he wrote a book called The Satanic Verses, in which he makes some kind of... he uses the name of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his wives, and this and that. And it's a very kind of... It's like some Bollywood soap television thing. It's very contemporary, very... But there was jihad pronounced against him. I think even if you find out where he's staying... And maybe we could make some money like this for the, because if someone kills him, I think there's $2 million or something on his. No, that's an idea. Okay, this is not recorded, is it? But it's an idea. Anyhow, it's this. But in England now, they say no. This is there's very relaxed atmosphere. The more Kali Yuga progresses, what is blasphemy? What is? But more or less, it's saying that. The deity is a stone, the priest is talking a bunch of nonsense, how could this ritual is just stupid. All of this is considered blasphemy. To say that something which is divine is actually mundane. More or less this is blasphemy. So to say that such and such a Swamiji or such and such a, you know, or I don't know, maybe even to say... The kirtan leader, he sings like a frog, although this actually may be true. So is it blasphemy? Is there any justification? So within the realm of offense, is there justification for the offense? Because in law, one of the defenses, there's for each crime, there's various defenses. For example, murder. It can be self-defense. Or you can say, for example, this person, his picture is on the wanted poster, he had his thing, he was going to blow up the train, I hit him over the head, I didn't mean to kill him, but that would be justifiable homicide because you were preventing a person creating a greater crime. Or so there's so many defenses. So there's also defenses. In law, we can have slander. If I say something against the person's good reputation or his professional practices, that doctor's a quack, he's never saved anyone, he just kills people, the doctors say, hey, I have my professional business reputation. This is, where are you getting the basis for this? So if you say it, it's slander. If you write it, it's libel. But one of the justifications, one of the defenses for libel, is that it's fair comment. The devotee sings like a frog. Maybe that's a fair comment. Maybe he's actually not the best kirtan singer in the. So there can be justification for saying a certain thing. So perhaps in this offense about offending a pure devotee by something we say, perhaps there is justification for it. So this can be offense. So not necessarily, don't you think the dal's too salty today? This is maybe you don't like it. And so there can be a range of an opinion without it being aparad. So, for example, there was once a famous case after the Second World War. There was one of the concentration camp doctors, and they would experiment on people. So Hitler, he was way ahead in understanding genetics. And now that we've unraveled the genome, some of you have a science or a medical background, now we've unraveled the genome, they are trying to understand. I have a great interest in this because ultimately, is it genetics or is it karma? And it's actually the same thing, that one is born with a certain predisposition towards a certain disease. I was just speaking to one lady, she's a PhD in genetic research for the Wellcome Foundation, a big charity. And she said, we think now it's all genetic. You have the gene, you have the chromosome. That's it. Pretty much you're going to develop the disease. So she was talking about cancer research. And I was saying, well, is there any, can you do a special diet? And, you know, she says, we don't think so. We think people are just kidding themselves. They're going to get cancer between 50 and 60. And so we're talking karma. So it's the same thing. So with the genome, with it, they're looking for certain populations, and this is where the money is made, because Jewish people, they have a tendency for Tay-Sachs disease. If both parents have it, chances are the child, so they can screen the person, sorry, sweetheart, I don't want to marry you because I want someone without this gene, and so on and so on and so on. So this Hitler, he was, and what they're doing with the gene, they're looking for populations. There was in English history, there was a mutiny on a ship going to Australia, and the ship, they took the crew, they put the captain away, and they hid on this little island. So there's an island down near Tahiti where these people hid, and they married the natives and so on. So pretty much everybody's got the same genes because they were coming from the same ancestors. So by examining these pockets of genome, they can see, okay, this gentleman, he has tuberculosis, and none of this population does, or this population is tending towards heart. They can identify where is the... So Hitler, he was doing like this. He got identical twins. He was subjecting one twin to all different kinds of freezing them and starving them, so many things. And then examining the twin that was healthy, what is the difference, what is the... So he liked this identical twins. And so there was this one doctor, and after the war, some Jewish lady, she wrote her memoirs in the camps and so on, and she named this doctor as the doctor of death, and he did so many things. Meanwhile, he's in Switzerland. He has a respectable practice. He's treating very wealthy people. So he objects to this slander, this libel, and he wants to sue the lady. He said, this is nonsense. He wants to protect his reputation. So she said he did it to hundreds of people. But in the end, they could only find one person who would say, yes, this is the doctor. Of course, he said, no, it's not me. You're mistaken. I was actually in the mountains in Austria this time. I've never done that. You know, he defended himself. But the jury, they found that there wasn't sufficient evidence for the lady to say that he had done this to hundreds of people. Because, in fact, there was only one person that they had in the court. One person would give evidence. So they found that the person, the good doctor's reputation had been damaged. And he had the right to get some compensation to defend his good name. But they said the compensation that he should get is only one guilder, maybe 10 rupees. He said, this is how much his reputation has been damaged, 10 rupees worth. So yes, sir, you won your case. You're absolutely correct. This was a false allegation against you. Your good reputation has been damaged, about 10 rupees worth. So take the 10 rupees and pay your own costs. You're not getting costs. So there can be some... This is, what I'm talking about is justification. There can be some justification for the allegation, which again doesn't become within the scope of Vaishnava apparat. So, nevertheless, this whole tendency to apparat, to insult people, to spoil their good name, comes from this core disease tendency that we have to lord it over the material nature. If you're truly thinking, this person is superior to me in so many ways, where is the scope for criticism? It's only you think that he is a nonsense, or this is, there's so much, unfortunately, within our Vaishnav community, so much, there is so much professional jealousy, there's so much, someone was ambitious, he did not have his ambitions fulfilled, another person, he is less qualified than me, how is he, so many, unfortunately. But this all comes from this root disease of our tendency to lord it over the material energy. So the scientists today, they feel that the universe is probably 10 to 20 billion years old. One devotee was telling me that he had counted the ages of Manu to this, and he thinks it's so many trillion, 43 trillion something. Anyway, we're talking big, big numbers. So if we have a birth, if our lifespan is between 50 and 100 years, and we're talking 20 billion, we're trying to, you know, do the math, it's big, big numbers. We've had lots of births. And I was just reading Second Canto a few days ago, and about Lord Brahma making the creation, and Prabhupada's explaining in the purport that the bodies he creates were actually just the consciousness that the living entities had from the previous manifestation. So even in this universe, we're talking big, big numbers of creation, billions of years, trillions of years. But even this is just one of a succession of different ages, different. So the Sanskrit term which is used to describe our entanglement in the material world is anadi, which is variously described timeless, eternal, without beginning, from the start. So Prabhupada says that practically speaking, we're eternally conditioned. Practically speaking, eternally conditioned. And except for the mercy of the acharya, except for the mercy of the pure devotee, this is what we're going to be for very, very, very long, just forever, practically speaking. There's no way out. So we have had this consciousness of lording it over, of exploiting eternally, practically, since the beginning of creation. So this is how we have this habit of lording it over others, which is the cause of this offense which we have. So we are so covered, we are so conditioned, we have so much habit that we are, ooh, you see them. Just, I was getting my head shaved yesterday, and one lady, one man, they were fighting, and this and that, and it's just Kali Yuga. So still we have this. This is our environment. This is where we are coming from. So this is our propensity. Srila Prabhupada, very, very special living entity, he had no propensity to lord it over the material energy. Because he had no propensity, this is why Paramatma Suprasa, he has direct access. So it is explained that the person Bhagwat, the book Bhagwat, it is the same. Same thing. You can listen to the person, you can read the book, it's the same thing. Because there is no it is the same message. It is not changed in any way. It is completely the same. Because there is no tendency to lord it over the material energy. But as soon as you get some little tendency, then there is some little self-interest, there is some competition, there is some way we want to win, and then it becomes possible that we are becoming offensive, And possibly we will lose everything. All of our endeavors, all of our... So, this word here is called... The word that's used is Nirvaiva, which is blameless. So, we can see that a pure person, a person who's only doing Krishna's bidding, a person... He's pure, he's blameless, he has no enemies. Srila Prabhupada said, I have no enemies. He said, some people, they make the enemy of me. Therefore, I have enemies. But he himself, he has no. So in one of the dioramas, it's the humble sage. He sees with equal vision the elephant, the dog eater. It's the jiva. So how can this jiva be encouraged? How can they make advancement? How can they... So this was Lord Chaitanya. Whoever we meet, we should just encourage this person. Assess their situation. And Prabhu, have you tried? Would you like to try some prasadam? Have you considered? So many ways. So this is the mission of the Vaishnava. And we are trying to be the humble servants of Srila Prabhupada in his mission to somehow or other invite people that they can get out of this cycle of birth and death. So we are, most probably all of us, we are not perfect. But Srila Prabhupada was perfect. He was blameless. But Srila Prabhupada, he also did criticize people. He criticized the scientists. He even criticized some of his god brothers. And I was in Vrindavan in the early days when we were building the temple there. And Prabhupada would say, you don't go to this person. You don't associate with this person. You don't. And sometimes he was a little more strong in his criticism of different things that they did. On his deathbed, when the god brothers were coming to see him, Prabhupada, he asked them, he said, please forgive me for my offenses, for my criticism. And they said, you know, you are the world acharya. How can you make, how can you be offensive? He said, no. He said, sometimes to instruct my disciples, I spoke strongly, or I said this, or I said that. So we are not thinking that Srila Prabhupada was offensive, but he did criticize. So probably the whole of the... Probably it's all based on intention. So in criminal law, the whole of criminal law is based on intention. When you did a particular thing, what was in your mind? The Americans say premeditated. Previously, in Old English, they would say with malice. Malice aforethought. You were thinking in a malicious way when you were doing this. Now we just say, what is the intention? What was the intention when... So this is most probably the kernel. This is probably the was there Prabhuji, our wonderful saxophone player, he came into the room yesterday, and I said to him, hey, we have a big problem. He said, oh, what is this? I said, people think I'm the saxophone player. I said, people are saying, what is this noise you're making? You're just, you know. I said, we have to resolve this. I said, I can think of two solutions. I said, one is that you wear the saxophone and we walk together around and everyone will say, oh, it's not him, it's the other guy. I said, this is what, or you just put it away and we just, you know, I said, because I'm just getting so much blame from, I was teasing him. So, we're talking about offense, but Prabhupada says here, it's Lord Krishna. He's speaking. He's telling, you know, anyone who, no matter what they've done, you know, I will, you know, punish them. So he says, Krishna is saying, when Haranyakasipu teases the great devotee Prahlad. So this is the, even teasing is the offense. So I didn't read this yesterday, and I said to Prabhuji, he said, oh, can you give class this morning? I said, oh, I wish you would have given me the book yesterday. I could think about what I was going to say a little longer. And I would have read this word teasing, and I wouldn't have said anything about the... See? I wouldn't have said anything about the saxophone. Not even in jest. So where is this? So, but probably it's intention. Our intention, but even unknowingly, we can do this. So how can we guard against this? This is the point. A person studying for his exams, he's studying for his profession, medical, very, very long studies. And you can imagine one thing you do wrong, that's it. There was a young devotee girl, she was studying for her pharmacy final pharmacy examinations. And I was talking to her, and she told me that when one prescribes as a pharmacist, if unintentionally you give the wrong medicine, it's a criminal offense. There's no scope for error. You are in a very privileged position. Every medicine is a poison. It poisons in some way. The poison is used to counteract the disease. A person who's sick, they definitely cannot be poisoned in a way which is not beneficial to them. Sometimes the medicine kills them anyway. But it's a criminal offense. You go to prison. You lose your license just one time you give the wrong. This is how serious it is. So, even intentionally, so we have to guard against this. We're out of time. I'm just going to say one very quick thing at the end. One time I was outside Srila Prabhupada's room chanting my japa, and his servant came out just having given Prabhupada his massage, and he was chuckling. Wow. And I said, oh, did Prabhupada say something? He said, yes. He said, I was massaging, and Prabhupada said, he said, a Vaishnav, he said, he worships, takes instructions from, clings to the advice of those Vaishnav who he considers to be more advanced. He said, a Vaishnav, he befriends those Vaishnavs who he considers to be on his same level. And he said, a Vaishnav, he encourages, he tries to help, he tries to support those Vaishnavs who he considers to be less advanced than himself. He said, this is a Vaishnav. He said, but you, and the massage would say, he said, I was hoping he was saying plural, you, not me, but all of us. He said, oh, I hope it's just not me. He said, but you, he said, you have such a materialistic understanding of what is Vaishnavism. He said, when you see a person who is more advanced, he said, simply you want to criticize them. Bring them down to your level. Oh, you think he's, well, I knew him when he, oh, no one is such a nice Vaishnav as me. He said, when you see a Vaishnav who is you consider to be on your same level, he says, simply you want to boast to them. Oh, do you know how many books I did? Do you, I'm the best Vaishnav. Boast to him. What is your accomplishments, Prabhupada said. He said, and when you see a Vaishnav who you consider to be less advanced, he says, simply you want to control them. Simply you want to have them serve you to do your bidding. He said, this is such a materialistic understanding of what is Vaishnavism. So, we can go through all of the procedure. We can shave our head on the right day. We can appear to be a Vaishnav. But if we have this propensity, if as long as we retain, as until we become purified, of this propensity to lord it over material energy, it doesn't matter what is the package. So many people, they're going away from their places of worship. They said the priests are corrupt. They're just corrupt. They're just money grabbers. They're doing all kinds of stuff. They're just, how can we get... This was the whole Reformation. This is when the Protestant Church was established. It broke away from the popes. It broke away. Every country has the history of the priesthood in Kali Yuga becoming corrupted. So even we must be very, very, very careful. Very so. Even the person may have the package. He may have the trimmings. He may have the sadhu profile. So many sadhus. So many sadhus. One time, someone in the early days, we were discovering, so India was a whole adventure. We just didn't know anything. We're Western. We're trying to just establish ISKCON. I remember one time, some devotee, he was in a certain area of Calcutta. He was trying to collect, make members. And he came back and he was a little bewildered. And he said, Srila Prabhupada, he said, I'm preaching to these people and they worship such and such a person. They say he is an incarnation. Prabhupada said, yes. He said, in Calcutta, they have incarnation on every street corner. They have different incarnations. This is Calcutta. So many incarnations. He just preached to them. Just preach anyway. So, we must just do the best we can. We must be very, very careful. We have the tendency. How do you get a habit? By how do you get good habits in your children? How do you get the habit for learning, the habit, so many things? It became very apparent to me when I first became in India that so many of the rituals that people go through, which determine what is your class, what is your, each class has so many rituals, but I could see that so many of these rituals were simply a big population, close together, sharing common facilities like the pump, like the water, and the tendency for disease in the rainy season, in the so there's so many archmen, so many different, which are just rituals, but basically just to keep clean, basically just to keep. So we get so many rituals, so many just out of habit. So there's so many things. You ask a person, why do you do this? Why do you do that? Prabhupada talks about the cat. He said that there was a young girl, she was getting married, and they're all preparing. So the cat is very, the shiny clothes they wear and so on and so on. Bling, we say now in England. So much bling. They had a lot of bling. So the girl wants a sari with lots of bling. So all the glittery, all the jari. So the cat was, you know, it was in the way. They were running out of time. So eventually the mom, she just took the cat and she looked around and she got a basket and she put the basket upside down and put something on the basket and that was it. So of course her daughter did the same thing. They were getting married, so they got the cat. And then after a few, there was no cat, so they had to go and borrow a cat, and the cat went under the basket and the whole thing. So eventually someone says, well, why do we do this with the cat? And no, this is our tradition. And Prabhupada said, this is Hinduism. It's just something has been adopted, and it's just, but it becomes the habit. So how do we break the habit? So Lord Chaitanya, who is saying this is the mad elephant offense, it can destroy everything, he's given the solution to break the habit, to become humble, not to be absorbed in material consciousness. And this is difficult because we've been doing this for billions of births. For billions of births, this cat has been going under the basket. Billions of births. So we have to reprogram ourselves. We have to. So Lord Chaitanya enjoins that this is Trinadapi, Sinu Chena. This is being humbler than the straw on the street and offering all respects to others. And I was saying to Prabhuji that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, when he was running the ashrams and so on, he would personally instruct each Vaishnav in the ashram. Each day you should endeavor to render personal service. Not what is your prescribed service, but some personal service. You take their dhoti down, Prabhuji, your dhoti was dry. Something, some small personal service to three of your god brothers every day. So in order that we can get this idea of service, this idea of humility, this idea that to get away from this tendency to lord it over. When I go about my everyday business, I completely expect the next person who talks to me, they want to sell me something, they want to boast to me, they want my ideas about something, they want to enroll me, I got this, you love this, you make lots of money. I completely expect 100% this next person I meet is going to try to exploit me in some way. And sometimes I meet a person who's so absorbed in their internal journey, their internal pilgrimage, they're just happy because they see something. This is so nice. And they can be Muslims, they can be Farsis, they can be Christians. Sometimes they can even be Hare Krishnas. Oh, Prabhu, so nice that you're, you know, this is so nice. Oh, so nice. I'm so happy to see you chanting. So somehow or other, we have to program ourselves. This ashram life is the ideal situation for reprogramming ourselves, we are hardwired to exploit others. Somehow or other, this is a wonderful opportunity. And for me, this was the genius of Srila Prabhupada. Amongst so many things, we can discuss Prabhupada's genius for weeks. But for me, that he had a society, set up society all over the world, where people of like minds can discuss, we can encourage each other, support, and the ashram system, where people like you, people like me for many years, we can take shelter, we can become strong, we can get the good habit of becoming Krishna conscious. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. A little late.
Last year. Then I have to give some extra.
Like ऐसे ब्रो जी
शिफ्ट करना है
हाँ ये टेंपरों नहीं हाँ इधर नहीं कल भी शायद क्लास इधर ही होगा
या फिर वहाँ कोने में लगा देते हैं
ये मेरे